The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012, day 15, and drama as Spain-France becomes first game to go to 120 minutes. Hey, well, it felt like it. It's French anyway toast, blown away by a passing Spain. Pod hears from an outraged Monsieur Auclair and asks if Portugal will fare any better against the Spain bots. Then it's on to Kiev for the final quarter-final. England and Italy will be through to the semis. That and more in today's Euro Football Daily. Hello, listeners, and welcome to another Euro Football Daily. John Ashdown's here, and he's bought a packet of wine gums.
Well, I can't possibly take credit for the wine gums.
All right.
Producer Ben brought the wine gums.
He did.
I'm enjoying the wine gums.
Yeah, you are enjoying them. Yeah, everyone's having a good old chew on those. Paul McInnes is here, and he's bought Enemy's Greatest Songs of the Enemy's Lifetimes, and...
I can't take full credit for that, I'm afraid. It's producer Ben bought this.
Cheapers, producer Ben. What didn't he bring? Tell us something surprising about their top 100 songs of their lifetime.
Well, I was just going to say, it struck me as quite odd that there's only one song from the 1960s in the top 10.
One song from the 1960s in the top 10?
Yeah, I mean, 60s quite commonly thought to be a good period for pop music.
Yeah.
Only one song. It's a great song, but do you know what it is?
I don't know.
Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys.
Well, it's a good song.
But not even their best, is it?
Well,
as football fans across the country will tell you, it's Snoop John B.
Snoop John B, yeah, that's true. I might have said Heroes and Villains, actually. I've always been a bit of a Heroes and Villains fan.
It's a game of opinions.
That's very, very true. Here with his, he's brought his opinions, although possibly producer Ben supplied those as well. I don't know. Scott Murray.
Hi there, James.
Hi. And there's Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Hi, Paolo.
Producer Ben brought me here too.
That's true, didn't he? Doesn't happen unless producer Ben makes it happen, listeners. There you go. Now, it was a bit like being at school, wasn't it, today? Spain, France. Wasn't it? You know, it was good for you and that, but you couldn't wait for the bell to ring.
I know what you mean, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of... I think when you're sitting there watching a game, thinking to yourself, am I enjoying this or not, then it probably means that you're not really enjoying it very much. And, you know, it's a bit like... I was trying to think of comparisons, like... You know, I could admire The Piano, the film, which won Oscars and stuff, but I'd rather watch Die Hard. I can enjoy a nice sort of clean consommé, but sometimes I'd rather have a big greasy burger with pineapple on it and all sorts of weird stuff. And it feels like Spain have got that kind of... They're perhaps the highest... You know, technical and all that sort of business, and you just think, I want to be more
really just consomme to you, John?
I think that's a fair comparison. Yeah.
Right, Paolo, did you enjoy the game?
You know, it was fine as it went. I was really disappointed with France. I don't think you can blame Spain for playing in a way that works for them and for continuing to try and win championships, which is what they've been doing. You know, well, they've won the last two and they're well on the course to doing another one. And if a team like France, you know, I thought it was interesting before the game, Laurent Blanc had this big discussion about we're going to react to them. And you know, and then he sort of clarified that by saying, well, when they have the ball, we're going to react to them. And, you know they're going to have the ball all the time. When we have the ball, then we can do our own thing. Well, you know, I've looked at the possession stats of that game, and France had 44% of the ball, which is more than any team in the tournament so far. Way more than Italy had. Well, not way more, but Italy, I think, had 40% in the first
against
game.
Against Spain.
Against Spain, yes. So they actually had a decent amount of the ball, and they did absolutely naff all with it. So... Mm. I was really disappointed with France. I don't think you can blame Spain for France's, I'd say, lack of ambition.
No, the television rather justifiably picked on Florent Malouda in a big, big way. Is there anybody else who should be up in the dock there for France?
For France?
Yeah.
Well, they were all fairly appalling, possibly apart from Ribéry, I thought was half decent. Debussy as well, who I think had a good tournament, was subbed in. You know, that was a wee shame. But it was just terrible viewing. It was terrible entertainment. If it was any team other than Spain being involved, we wouldn't even be trying to grab any straws from this. It was, by some distance, the worst game of the tournament.
Really? By some distance, what do you think?
I think so. I think it was dreadful.
I thought watching Spain more the Irish was worse than that. But I mean, I, I didn't think. I thought Ribéry was
golf on
quite sensibly, but the I thought Ribéry was a case in point. Actually, that he was one of the few players on the pitch in total who offered some form of acceleration, exhilaration in taking on a man or making something happen. But he, there was about three or four times where he did that bit, and then there was the short 10-yard pass to a colleague, which he couldn't execute. And I thought that was quite typical of the French performance. They had moments of flair, but really lacking the basic execution, which I think you could also say about Malouda and his absence of tracking back.
Right. How about this? There have now been 20 headed goals at Euro 2012. That's three more than any other edition ever, and it's still not finished. Extraordinary stuff. Let's hear from listeners. This was actually to your minute by minute, Scott. Mm. Richmond Walker says, watching Spain with a lead is like watching a boa constrictor finish off a chicken. He says, tight and inevitable, but not so easy to watch. That would be chicken tiki-taka, wouldn't it? I think probably. Spain not bothering to field a proper team like Falk did in the old days. Harry Tuttle says, I can't believe anyone who thinks Spain's refusal to field a striker is actually pretty damn cool. I suppose looking at their lineup, they'll get rid of the fullbacks soon so they can squeeze in Navas and Cazorla as false inside wingbacks. Ramos and Piqué would then be free to roam around the defensive third as false Makalelis. One could finally just transcribe a formation as simply 10. I think that's rather nice. No?
The thing is about Spain, I mean, obviously their defence is going to be, we may well win three major international tournaments on the bounce, which will be an amazing achievement, obviously. But I'm just wondering if history is going to be very kind to them if they do this or if they don't, because I'm beginning to think, well, probably the signature matches that Spain have been involved in during this entire period of dominance, there haven't been any, really. If you look at maybe the great West German side in the 70s, they had, you know, games in the 70 World Cup, the 74 World Cup, the 72 game against England at Wembley. The Hungarians had England at Wembley, the matches against Uruguay and West Germany. Spain don't seem to have done this. They're just grinding them out, which is getting results. It's fantastic, but I'm not entirely sure why we should have to necessarily enjoy all of this.
Well, I would say Spain 3, Russia 0 to that right. would be the one
yes,
game.
But I
only came up with that because I was looking back and thinking, well, I did enjoy this Spanish side when they first, and is it just because I'm bored of them winning it all, or is it that they've changed? And you look at that side that beat them, and you know there were players who are nowhere near the side now, like Senna or whatnot. But the one player you notice who's really absent from this side is Villa. Mm. And I think he's another player. He fits into that system. He's great technically. He plays those short balls, but he offers penetration. Now, yeah, I do think this Spanish team is not as exciting to watch as previous iterations. And I think the World Cup was the World Cup they had to adjust to playing against the boss, which they hadn't really had to do previous in 2008. But this time, I think, I thought the French, you know, went at them a reasonable amount, and just the tempo was slow from the Spanish. And Iniesta aside, they don't have anybody who wants to take on a man, and I think it's just not as exhilarating to watch.
But I think the thing with the speed of their play, I mean, it's all about the quick, slow, isn't it? They go very slow until they see their opening, and then they move very fast. And I think the thing about that Russia game you talk about is, Russia are almost the last team in a major tournament to play them naively. They're the last team in a major tournament to think, okay, we're just going to come at you and we're going to do this way and leave those sorts of gaps. And now what Spain are having to do every game is probe and take their time. And yeah, look, I mean, I agree, it isn't particularly entertaining to watch, but I don't know. You could sort of compare it to Germany last night, and there was a conversation you guys were having about 0.9 seconds per pass, and obviously they're taking, feels like forever on some of these passes, but it's not for them to entertain us. It's, you know, their job is to win the match, and it's sort of
it's not for us to celebrate them for winning matches either.
No, well, but I do think even in this tournament,
I think
they
deserve a bit of celebration, and we ask if history will be kind. I have a feeling that history will be kind, mainly because when you're watching, it can be a bit dull, but afterwards you tend to think, wow, that must have been pretty brilliant, no? Iniesta, Xavi, etc.
And I do think, funnily enough, one of the sort of times we'd say Spain were most entertaining in this tournament was probably against Italy, who are the one team who I think at least a little bit, and maybe they retreated at the end of the game, but I think in the first half tried to play Spain. They actually didn't just sit back and go, okay, well, we'll see what we can break.
But where's the fun in this? Because Spain have got their European Championship and then they got the World Cup, and you could excuse them grinding out a World Cup. They never won one before. But now they've got everything in the bag, you would think that they'd open up a wee bit.
OK, I think two things, just briefly. One, I think call it grinding out is possibly a little bit unfair. And secondly, they won by playing this kind of football, so it's not surprising that they're continuing to dance with the girl who invited them to the ball, to use another.
And nobody's ever won three tournaments back-to-back.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's another tweet. Andrew Dean says, Spain bringing on Torres has become their defensive approach. When they play him, it allows the five midfielders to drop deeper. It's fair enough, isn't it? Here's a tweet from a Mr. O'Clery. Says, god-awful game plan, team selection in the first half. Hate it when France play against their own nature and culture. Said angry Frenchman joins us now on the line. Philippe, you were very unhappy on Twitter. And is that going to be a widespread view among your compatriots after France's performance against Spain?
Well, yes, obviously it's going to be. Not just because of the result, but because of the manner, especially of the manner of the result. I must say that when team news filtered in the afternoon, people were plunged in a well of disbelief, really, and were wondering exactly what Laurent Blanc had in mind. But obviously what he had in mind was this kind of game plan that we vaguely saw against Spain, which meant that we played a 5-5-0 formation, something like that. And yes, I'm disappointed by the result, but I'm not very surprised at all. I mean, it was an absolutely appalling performance, one of the worst I can remember. Well, I say that. Actually, I don't have to go very far to remember something as bad as that. I just have to go back to the World Cup in 2010 and the Euro in 2008. It was more of the same, basically.
Was this as bad as 2010, do you think?
In terms of the performance, it was abject, really. It was not as bad as 2010. I wouldn't go that far. At least, you know, France went to the quarterfinals, showed a few things, in particular against Ukraine. But when it came to meet a team that was supposed to be a real challenge for France, suddenly fear stepped in. Fear in the setup, fear in the team selection, fear with every player, it seems. And we went back to the default setting, which has been France's default setting for quite a while now.
It wasn't just fear, though. There seemed to be a certain disinterest from one or two players. Obviously, Malouda in particular on the Xabi Alonso goal.
Well, it's perhaps indicative of the fact that what happened after the Sweden game, you know, it's been well publicized that there were a number of altercations in the dressing room after that particular game. It might be that these altercations had a bigger consequence than we thought would be the case. You know, Blanc had tried to reassure everybody that after words were exchanged on that occasion, the team had got back together and had tried to overcome that. But obviously, it's not a team. It wasn't a team. It was pathetic. And also, what I must say, Jimbo, is that the way they played is a complete insult to French footballing culture as a whole, and which was the big problem we had with Raymond Domenech, is that he was making a team play a kind of football that is totally alien to our DNA, and Laurent Blanc seemed to have tried at least to make us play again as France should play, and we were found out against Spain in the most important game that he was in charge of. And that's more than disappointing.
Hi, Philippe. Paolo here. I was just wondering on that point, because, I mean, you mentioned it a couple of times, and I guess the one counterpoint I wanted to bring to that was Holland had exactly the same discourse in this tournament. They were playing, you know, against the Dutch way, and so at the end, Van Marwijk does this, okay, fine, here's five attackers on the field against Portugal, and it was kind of a massive disaster, really. I mean, it didn't work at all, and I just wonder if maybe that was on Blanc's mind, or if you think that mitigates his actions at all.
If you play Mathieu Debuchy as a right flank midfielder, a position he's never played in before, you're sending a signal, not just to the Spanish team, but to the rest of the French team, that you basically, what we call, to bétonner, which is to pour concrete in the team. That's the way we say it in French. And it's completely alien. The formation made no sense whatsoever. I'm struggling to come up with words, because I couldn't believe. I'm still trying to understand how Blanc can have come to this team selection and to this so-called game plan before the game, And he wanted to do a Chelsea, or I don't know what, but with players who are completely inept to fulfill these kind of roles. Completely inept. So it's not a case of just on the night trying something which doesn't work out. It's the case of literally throwing the dice in the air, seeing what they land on, and go with that, and you know, cross our fingers and hope to God, and that's it. And it didn't work out, and nobody thought it would work out anyway. And it's completely against the genes of that particular French team, as it is of the genes against the genes of any other French team that you can think about in the past.
Well, Philippe, this is obviously still quite a raw wound, but what do you think is going to be the consequences for Blanc, who was very much the man who'd rescued France after the South African World Cup?
He did. We have to remember the fact that in 2010, when he got the team back, and after Neisner and the Bus of Shame and so forth, and the defeat to Belarus at home for his first competitive game, he was the man who engineered a 23 unbeaten game run. So his contract is coming up for renewal at the end of the Euro, which is now. There are a number of people within the FA who would like him to carry on. There are also proposals we hear about from various clubs. In fairness, his stock is not very will not be very very high tomorrow in France. That's what I will say.
Hmm. Oh, okay, Philippe. Well, sorry to see you leave the tournament so soon.
Well, if that's the way we were going to play in the next few games, I'm not so sorry myself.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
John, you had a comedy tweet.
Well, I just wanted to make a cheap joke at Gary Neville's expense. If that was right. His analysis.
No room for that kind of
thing. Well, exactly. That's what I thought. With 20 minutes to go or so, he tweeted that Spain are like a woodpecker. Eventually, the timber falls.
Right.
Which occurred to me that he's getting his peckers confused with his beavers.
Right.
Which might be problematic in the Neville bedroom.
Yeah. I wanted to say that Spain, maybe, are they a little bit like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix? Like in the first one, when he goes all slow-mo on their asses and he's just kind of, he's not breaking sweat. They're doing everything, the Agent Smith, at him, and he's just da-da-da-da-da. You're thinking, wow, this is so cool. But by the time the second time and the third time comes around, it's, oh, do you know what I mean?
By the third one, you want him to get
basically
get
Spain
got.
Are Matrix, I'm thinking. And this is the third film. That's my analogy. Yours is much better. Portugal awaits Spain next. What's that going to be like? Nani, Ronaldo tearing up those Spanish defenders? Scott, what picture are you drawing?
I was Ever Decreasing Circle.
All right, nice.
but you would think it would be a wee bit better than that, in as much as Portugal have got a couple of players who'll at least get the head down and go for it a wee bit. It just depends whether, you know, the likes of Ronaldo and Nani will have to have the games of their lives, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they have been the most effective counter-attacking team so far, the Portuguese. They, out of any side, you probably expect them to make the most out of their opportunities. But that's when the Del Bosque formation of the two sitting midfielders comes in, the holding midfielders. They're well set up to deal with that. I'd like to see Ronaldo get the game by the scruff of the neck and win it, I have to say. Yeah. I don't know why, but I'd like to see a massive individual performance overcome the team ethic.
Well, I think actually, you know, there's certainly a possibility now. I think it's set up after the last couple of games where, having had some doubts on him in the first couple, and that, you know, Ronaldo has produced, there's a real possibility now that when this is his moment, this could become his tournament. If he beats, I know it won't be him beating Spain, it'll be Portugal beating Spain, but if he comes up with the moment in that game or breaks Spain down, this will be his tournament. And that's, you know, that's obviously something that's in the that's going to be in his mind.
I don't think that's going to happen. It'll be England that beat Spain in the final, which they pretty much threw to.
I will
now,
say one thing, actually, on Paul's comment that Portugal most effective counter-attacking side in the tournament. England have the best shots-to-goals ratio of any side in the tournament.
That's because they've taken fewer shots than anybody
exactly,
else.
Exactly, but they've been effective when they've had the few opportunities they've created.
That's very, very true. That's very, very true. England have lasted longer in this tournament than France did, tweeted Oliver Holt, and he's not wrong, because they play, of course, on Sunday against Italy.
Does this mean we've finished in the top five?
Yeah, effectively it does. England struggled with Sweden and Ukraine. So why is it that England, far from being an underrated team, are now suddenly being surrounded by expectations again, Joe?
Well, I said on the pod yesterday that I fancied England today.
Yeah,
and then as I was cycling home through the mean streets of London at 11:30 last night, I was thinking, why did I say, what makes me think that? And I tried to come up with a list of reasons, and the only one I could really think of was that Thiago Motta's got a knock, and he's not very good in the first place. So you've got a half-fit, half-good Thiago Motta.
Chiellini's out,
that was the other thing. And I thought, the Irish rattled Italy to some extent in the group game, and I say rattled, they got into a couple of positions where there were one or two decent passes away from creating a goal scoring opportunity, but England kind of got a similarity with Ireland. That's kind of a reason for hope, but when you actually analyse it, I don't know why I've got that good feeling.
I think the Chiellini thing is a very big point. He's by far Italy's best defender, has been for some years now.
Yeah, although I think that's been slightly overstated, only in as much as at Juventus this season, when they played a back four, Chiellini normally was pushed out to left back with Bonucci and Barzagli, which will be the partnership starting in the centre. They are a bit slow, and I think that someone like Welbeck, certainly young, will fancy their chances of getting behind them, but then you could reverse that proposition and say, well, John Terry's a bit slow, and very possibly if he gets on the field, I would imagine that Di Natale will fancy his chances of causing some damage there.
Mm.
How would it set up in the middle for Italy?
Well, this is the great question now, because they played 3-5-2 in the first two games, they played 4-3-1-2 against Ireland. Every paper is reporting that they're going with 4-3-1-2. Now, Prandelli was a bit coy this afternoon at his press conference, and all through this tournament, it's sort of been a running theme for him. He's been quite openly frustrated with the Italian press for reporting all of his plans, and at every stage he said, well, could we please not give the opposition a hand? You know, Spain were able to spring this big surprise by starting without a striker against us. We haven't been able to do that. And he basically said the same thing again today. He said, you know, I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing. The players might know, but I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to leak it. So it will be it'd be fascinating to see if he does go back to 3-5-2. I think more likely, especially with Chiellini out, he will stay with the four. And then you've got this three-man midfield, which is a three-man midfield with a trequartista, which was Motta, maybe Motta, he's touch and go, and if not, probably Montolivo, who, frankly, I don't think is in very good form at the moment. That makes it a very different setup. And I know James wants to interrupt me now, so I'm going to stop.
I was just... You said he had a knock. I was like, what's the matter? No, but I did actually have a...
Hey.
I had another...
Well, I mean, I just wanted to say quickly, just because James... Just because what Paul's asking, if they do go with that midfield, which I think they will, it's supposed to be a rotating midfield. That's right. The nominal idea, is that you have no real trequartista, because there isn't one in Italy. There's not a player who really fills that. But against Ireland, that didn't work. I mean, Notarino is being suggested as the guy to go instead of Montolivo, but I don't think that'll happen.
Right. Well, to add a fresh bit of tactical perspective to all of this, let's dial up now Michael Cox of zonalmarking.net. Michael, are you there?
I am indeed. Hello, James.
Hi, Michael. Now, interesting game Sunday evening. We're just discussing all the different, you know, aspects of it. One quick question, first of all, I was wondering about Hodgson's big game plan of having Italy sitting back and then hitting teams on the break. Does that actually play into Italy's hands a bit, given that it's the Anglo-Saxon aggression, it's pressing that they usually fear most in teams like England?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I can see it being a game that's relatively slow to get going, because I don't think either side are going to come out and play particularly proactive football. So, yeah, I think there's a case for saying that, and there's also a case for saying that England need a team who will really come on to them. And although Italy do play, you know, a decent passing game now, they're not a particularly defensive side, I don't think they're going to be leaving too many gaps at the back. They do generally keep quite a good shape about them. So it's going to be an interesting tactical battle, if maybe not a particularly exciting game.
Who's your money on, Michael, and why?
I think it's a fairly even game. I mean, if I had to put my money one way or another, I'd go for Italy. I just think that they've got a couple of players that England might be surprised about. That's the thing with this Italy side. I think it's too easy to look at Pirlo and say, if you stop Pirlo, you stop Italy. They're also going to have Balotelli, they're going to have Marchisio, they're going to have Cassano. And it's those kind of players, particularly Marchisio and Cassano, who are really intelligent with their movement and I think might just pop up in those little positions between the lines and surprise England. So I'd go for Italy, but I think it's quite a difficult game to call. I don't think either side has played particularly impressive football so far. So it could be quite a slow game, I think.
Mm. They've been fairly one-sided, the quarterfinals so far. Saturday's game, Michael, we really enjoyed it here from a tactical point of view. How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting game. I mean, it was a very big gamble by Laurent Blanc to play the side that he did, to try and, you know, completely shut off Spain's left-back zone, and that was a huge compliment to Jordi Alba. Obviously, it didn't work because they conceded the first goal when Debuchy fell over and Alba chipped the ball into the middle. But after that, I thought France were incredibly tame. They didn't really have a plan B. They put on too many attackers, which meant that they couldn't win the ball in the first place to attack. And, you know, Spain, I think, are going to get criticised a lot for this because people say they're boring. They say they didn't create a lot of chances. But they were 1-0 up for about 70, 75 minutes of the game, and I'm not really sure what you can expect them to do. They're obviously going to keep the ball in that situation and run down the clock. I think if Spain have been boring in this tournament, it's been against Italy and against Croatia when the game was at 0-0. They needed to score to go ahead and get the 3 points, and they were content to hold on to the ball. But I'm not sure you can have a go at them for being boring when they're 1-0 up and it's the other team that needs to make the running.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much what we were saying here as well. Right, Scott? Yeah.
Paul? Yeah. I very much disagree. They should have gone like the Germans and gone for 3 or 4.
Go for it.
Go for it, mate.
Yeah. All right. Do you disagree with Michael's view on Sunday's game?
I'm sure Michael's in a better position than me to comment, and everybody's saying it's going to be tight, whether you call it one way or t'other. I'm just wondering, from your point of view, Michael, what you think, given that we will be playing within a pretty expected system, what England's best hopes of getting at the Italians would be?
Well, I think whichever way Italy play, whether they play a 3-5-2 or a diamond, they are a little bit bare down the flanks. You know, they don't protect the fullbacks well. I think there's also question marks about Abate and Balzaretti, assuming it's going to be those two when they're forced back into defensive positions. My worry would be that England don't really test them enough. I mean, Young has tended to venture into central positions. Milner, as Barney Rone very eloquently explained in The Guardian on Friday, I think it was, is kind of just someone who runs up and down and hasn't done particularly well at taking on the fullback. And as much as Walcott and to a certain extent Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain seem to be game-changing players from the bench, personally I'd love to see one of them start just to stretch the play, to get around the back of Italy, to test their fullbacks defensively. And I think it would be a shame if England play, you know, really narrow, because Italy are quite compact and solid in the centre, and down wide positions, I think they're a little bit vulnerable.
Barney's description of Milner, in case you didn't read it, was of a man resolutely doing lengths while a game of water polo was going on around it, which is almost up there with that superb characterisation of Andy Carroll as performing the same kind of tactical function as the kind of diseased carcass that would be lobbed by a catapult at a besieged castle in, you know, times of yore. Nice one, Michael. Well, listen, terrific stuff. And let's hope that this quarterfinal at least rekindles a bit of the fire that we had back in the group stages all that time ago.
Yeah, exactly. I think you need a good game at this stage. People talk about whether this is the best tournament of the last 10 years or whether it's a good tournament or whatever. But I think in 2 or 3 years, people remember the quarterfinals, the semifinals and the final. They don't really remember what went on in the group stages. So, yeah, let's hope for some goals.
Let's hope so indeed. Thanks ever so much for joining us, Michael.
Cheers, James. Bye-bye.
The build-up to this game has been enlivened ever so much by the quotes emanating from the two camps. Ashley Cole and Balotelli were both in the headlines today. My bum's not in the Nutella jar. That was Balotelli, not Ashley Cole. Can I just stress who said that one? What did he mean by it, do you think?
Well, my interpretation of it, anyway, is that because he was basically following off a comment about him being frustrated and wound up after the first couple of games and not scoring. But my interpretation of it was that he basically was saying, look, I've been wound up, I've been in a bad mood, but I haven't been pooing in everyone's breakfast accompaniment,
right.
I think is what he was saying. So
I haven't wiped
been,
my bum in your breakfast condiment.
Yeah, so right. He hasn't been ruining the mood. But I do think it's fascinating how in this build-up, we've obviously become obsessed with Balotelli. I mean, it makes sense. He plays in England. They're playing against Italy. But the real sort of conversation, I mean, I've even seen it written in a couple of pieces today that Balotelli is the man who'd need to beat England for Italy, which is straight, first of all, just not true. But I do think also this idea that, oh, Balotelli, he's so mad and because he's had a few, you know, hijinks along the way. It's fascinating how there's been able to be that conversation literally parallel to conversations about Antonio Cassano becoming a leader for this Italy team. He actually had to specifically reject the suggestion from a journalist this week that he was now a leader for Italy, saying, yeah, I'm not a leader, leaders run the post and do the rest. When Cassano, I mean, Jesus, his behaviour sort of through the first 7 or 8 years of his career, I think, would put Balotelli's antics in, you know, a whole different category.
Absolutely. He used to regularly walk out of Italy training camps when he was in the under-21s.
Well, yeah, exactly. At Roma, at his club side, Roma, I believe he walked out 3 times in a single season on Fabio Capello, who he later described as a great coach and like a father to him. And you know, he talked about his biography about crashing a car at 180 miles an hour because he was calling someone on one phone and texting on the other one. And obviously there's the famous sex and pastry
clips.
But I mean, he was quite open about it. He said in his autobiography, you know, I don't care. I'm having a good time. I'm rich, and it doesn't matter that I'm not
stop
doing
talking
great.
About Italy. Here's England tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's come on to the Ashley Cole quote.
Bulldogs, 11
he
bulldogs.
He almost crashed a car as well, didn't he?
He did.
Did he have sex with a donut? We don't know. What was his quote,
Paul? That's no way to talk about Cheryl Cole. Do people call people donuts? You donut.
You donut.
Jog on, you donut.
Yeah, what did Ashley Cole say today?
Something about 11 bulldogs.
He said we're going to be 11 bulldogs out there.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting game plan. And it means...
But it's quite interesting, this with the... No, it isn't. It's very dull. But the whole... Richard Williams' piece about the line in Hodgson's rhetoric about putting the church back in the village green, or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
That all this... It seems to me to be a little bit simplistic, but all this kind of English, kind of village green, traditional English imagery is seeping
into the
discussions.
Hodgson said he wants to put the church back in the village green.
Yes, which means give people something that they all commonly understand and focus on and can believe in.
All right.
But yet it sounds like John Major talking. And then right. Then Ashley Cole coming up with the Bulldogs. I mean, what is this next? People going to be getting spiders' webs on their faces? Probably Beckham's already got one, I don't know.
I like the way you're taking that. All right, Paul.
Is Wayne Rooney going to deliver tomorrow? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. Is Balotelli going to deliver? There's so many players. Balotelli's been a bit peripheral. I know we're back on Italy. So we'll talk, if you like, about England. We heard zonalmarking.net suggest that he thinks... It's with Italy, this one, but pretty much everyone else is saying England. What about you?
I mean, I think we might... I've got a horrible feeling we'll go out unluckily, but I think we might beat the Italians. I just cannot see any way past the Germans, though.
Scott?
I think Italy will win tomorrow reasonably easily.
Really?
Mm.
Paolo? No, you don't want to, do you?
No.
John, what about you? Do you want to?
Yeah, well... I'm going to stick with what I said last night. I think England will sneak it.
Right, okay. Good. Remember, you've got a long bike ride home.
Well, I'll change my mind by the time I get home.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good then, listeners. By the time we next speak, we'll find out who will have won that game and who'll be facing the Germans in the semis. But that pretty much wraps it up for today's edition of Euro 2012 Football Daily. I say pretty much because... with in no way a heavy heart or anything like that. Producer Ben's very special. How can we cram Euro 2012 managers into song titles competition? The results are in. And actually, there were a couple of good ones here. Matt M.J. Schultz has got, I'm living in Del Bosque, I'm living in Del Cardboard Bosque. I quite like that one. Power of Love, which we had that yesterday, didn't we? Oh, no, that was Yogi Love, a bad name. Was there another one you wanted to mention there, Ben? I think I have one, though.
Alto Ryan tweeted, anything by the Bilic people.
The Bilic people, right. Okay. But Paolo Benta Bumper Baby, Roy Hodgson of mine. These are yours. You did them. Producer Ben. Gee. All right. If anyone out there in Breakfast Radio is hiring, Producer Ben is the chap for you. We'll be back on Sunday with another Euro 2012 special. Do make sure you join us then.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.